All right, let's start this third and final hour. What do you say, y'all? Hit reset, reboot, get yourself together, pull it together. What can you do to make it better? Pick up the phone, lob me a call, 1-800-636-8686. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. You want to get into the Rockets and how good they look after two games against Utah, a good Utah team. And they're making a good Utah team look anything but. Utah made their adjustments, and it didn't matter. The Rockets look good. Every bit as good as they were last year when they won 65 games, when they were a game away from beating Golden State. They look good. They look better. And I'll have that for you in a minute. Also, the NFL draft is now about a week off. So obviously, what I'm looking to do is get you as many draft prospects as I possibly can prior to that draft, which is why we have another one coming up next segment, Brian Burns. In addition to that, I'm trying to get you experts to break it all down and set the stage. As an example, I do this on the podcast. I did it last week prior to the Masters when Elk came on. Elk and I did again this week for the draft, or I should say for the Masters, what we did last year. And the draft is coming up, so I want to do something similar with Trent Dilfer. So I sat with Trent Dilfer, or he came on the program via phone, the podcast. And to me, it's a perfect book. Because not only did Trent play the game at the highest level, win a Super Bowl, but he also analyzed the game at the highest level, broke it down at the highest level. He was a first-round pick. He knows all the pressure and expectation that comes along with being a high pick. He worked with the Elite 11 program for a decade, so he's got firsthand knowledge and experience with a lot of these quarterbacks that are going to come off the board early on. You know, I'll use the old cliche, but my man's forgotten more football than any of us will ever know. And I'm pretty sure the guy's not forgotten a damn thing because of that recall. So I leaned on that recall to get his opinion on Dwayne Haskins. He's known Haskins since he was a teenager. He worked with him back when he was 16. Recently, Trent Dilfer said that Haskins was, quote, Tom Brady-ish. I asked him about that. Incredibly high praise. I asked him what he meant by that when he said that.
Precise, exact, academic, fiercely competitive, chip on his shoulder, command, presence. Those would be terms I throw on Brady. And at 16 years old, you could see those traits with Dwayne, and he's only growing into more of those. Dwayne is more smooth than he is dynamic. He's more exact than he is twitchy. He surrounds himself with people to get him better. I mean, trains with Deshaun Watson, another, you know, high-level college and pro quarterbacks down in Atlanta. If he plays in a ball-out system where the ball's out quick, I think this guy's the limit for him.
Trent Dilfer on Dwayne Haskins. That's part of our podcast, which is live right now. I mean, Trent knows pretty much everything there is to know about these guys, all these guys. So if you're looking to get ready for next Thursday, make sure you work that pod into your drive home or your workout prior to that, because he's obviously dialed. We also talked about what I think is a pretty fascinating NFL career. And Trent's very honest about his career, real about that career, real about the journey. In fact, he's more about the journey than he is any of the numbers or things that he won. He'll say it himself. He feels like he does not necessarily have a lot to show for a huge chunk of his time in the NFL. That's not my take. That's his take. In fact, I really don't agree with that take. But he's very self-aware, very self-deprecating. And I think that Trent Dilfer deserves more credit than he gets, certainly more credit than he gives himself. Nobody's tougher on that guy, and plenty have been tough on him. Nobody's tougher on him than he is. But to me, no matter what anybody says, he does have a Super Bowl ring. He doesn't need to apologize for that Super Bowl ring. He had something to do with that Super Bowl ring, despite what people might think. Nobody can take that from him, especially given what he had to play through to get that ring in that one year he was in Baltimore. An undiagnosed injury that a lot of people don't know about, which is every bit as bad as it sounds. In fact, it's worse because it sounds horrible.
Oh, it was brutal. That year, I didn't really know what it was. I was the idiot that didn't go in and kind of ask what it was. Now, it's probably a good thing. They would have let me play. They would have put me on the shelf for a little bit. But I had a thing called osteitis pubis, and it's a common hockey injury. not very common in football, basketball, baseball. It's basically where you get calcification, where your groin, hip flexor, in that pelvic joint, like right underneath your junk. It was so painful. There'd be times I'd get up in a meeting and I couldn't stand all the way up. I couldn't train the way I wanted to train. I'd lost a bunch of weight. I was throwing ground balls in practice on some days. But when I got to Seattle, the next year is when it was diagnosed. And that's when the hard treatments came. That's when I had to start sticking needles in that joint and to break up the calcification with lidocaine, which is a pain reliever, and that really give me some relief. And it was brutal. I don't wish upon my worst enemy, and it's a horrible injury to have. Imagine having your junk taped up on your belly and two 12-inch needles going into each groin. It's not really enjoyable.
Did you hear what he just said? Imagine having your junk taped up on your belly and two 12-inch needles going into your groin. It's not really enjoyable. Quote, end of quote. That's an all-time line right there. There is so much more to that story and to that team in 2000 that you have to hear, but I'll let you find it on the pod. We also talked to Trent about his son, Trevin, who passed away at the age of 5 with a heart disease. Trent talked about what Trevin was like and what he remembers most about him.
I appreciate that question. I usually get the question teed up around, you know, how did I deal with it and all that stuff. And that's an easy answer. I clinged by a thread to life and, you know, went through massive depression, and my faith and friends and community pulled me out of it. But Trevin was awesome. And he was the peacemaker. He was a young, studly kid, good looking, strong, active, loved sports, blah, 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 blah. But more than anything else, he loved his sisters. He loved his mama. He hated when mom and I ever got into an argument. He just had that sweet soul to him at a young age that he wanted everybody to be lovey-dovey, as he said all the time. And there's still a giant gap missing in our family, but because of our faith, we believe this is a temporary residence, and we'll see him again one day. And so I'm staring at a picture. I have one picture. It's myself, my 3 beautiful daughters, and my gorgeous wife. And yeah, every time I see that picture, I know there's somebody missing. He'd be 21 years old right now, and it hurts to tell it each time. But it's also therapeutic, because I think with pain and with loss also comes some really special memories, and they're very, very vivid to this day. I can literally close my eyes and reach out and, you know, see exactly what he looks like and feel what his little muscles were like. And I can remember in his blue polo shirt, his khaki shorts, and his orange flip-flops.
If you're a parent, you don't hear that soundbite, you feel that soundbite. I mean, no parent should ever have to go through the amazing, just the terrible pain, incredible pain of outliving their child. But Trent and his family did. But as he mentioned, they truly believe that they will see Trevin again. And that's a huge part of what keeps them going. I can't thank him enough for that conversation. You know, I've often said that the best interviews are not interviews, they're conversations. I would add to that, the best conversation is not a conversation, it's a connection. And in a way, I kind of get that from him. Trent's talked a lot about that one of the things that he looks to do is make connections every single day. He wants to connect with everybody. It's not just seeing somebody or talking to somebody, it's really deeply connecting with somebody, because you can't really impact anybody or anything unless you connect with them first. It's a really amazing listen. And again, I can't do conversations or interviews or have connections like that necessarily on this program. They need to be long form. They need to be different. And this is why we do that podcast. My man has lived and is living a fascinating life, a life that now has him coaching high school football. He had a number of offers, both in college and in the pros. He coaches high school football. He told me he'd been retired. He literally had retired. But now he's a high school coach in Nashville, and mentioned also that he has never felt more alive than he does right now. So that's not a Super Bowl champ living in the past. That's somebody living in the present and loving it. Check this out. It's a great, great conversation. iTunes, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, JimRome.com. Subscribe. Just do it once. Once you subscribe, these podcasts, which we do weekly, will find you every single week. They're free. And it's premium content. And I had not spoken to him. Another reason, I had not spoken to Trent in a few years, so we got nearly 45 minutes on a podcast. So it's awesome. It's a different show. The podcast is a different show. It's not repurposed. It's not repackaged. It's exclusive content. It's a side hustle. It's another show. I love doing it. You should listen to it. I think you'll like it. And then we put in some of your voicemails too. 1-800-636-8686. Hey, and by the way, you have some equity in that. Who would you like to hear on our podcast? Hit me up. Hit Adam Hawk up. Let us know who you'd like to hear, and we'll chase it for you. That's Ep 77. There are 76 other episodes just like that one. All free. Pete in Kalamazoo tweets, incredible stories by Trent Dilfer on your latest pod hit. And rest in peace, Trevin. Thanks for another great conversation. Pete, you're welcome. Thank you for listening to it. Hey, do me a favor, if you don't mind, can you find the podcast? I mean, if you like my interviews and you like the content, you will like the podcast a lot. Can you find the podcast? Can you review it? And can you share it? And can you subscribe to it? It all benefits the bottom line. It helps the business. It helps the brand. It helps the content. It helps us book it going forward. Can you subscribe to it? And can you share it? And can you review it? All those things matter. It would help a lot. And I appreciate you doing it. Thank you very much. The Smack Off is June 21st. It's coming fast. You know, I bank a lot of vacation time in the summer, so you don't have as much time as you think you do. If you want in, you need to qualify. Beaks in Studio City tweets, thanks for almost making me tear up at work with that one, Rome. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Trent Dilfer is really deep, really powerful. And no parent should outlive their child. And I can't imagine anything more horrifying. See, the thing we did not get into, and he has before, and he's really open about it. And he said, if you listen to what he said, thank you for asking me that question the way you did and not asking me what I was dealing with, because that's easy. He said, I was hanging on by a thread for my life. And he's told the story that when they lost their son, he was depressed. He lost he gained a lot of weight. And that literally his teammate at that time, Matt Hasselbeck, saved his life. And Hasselbeck has said, you know, that's really an overstatement. And Trent says, no, it's not. He literally saved my life. And the story that Trent Dilfer tells, he did not tell it on my podcast, but he's told the story that they were in camp. And Matt Hasselbeck had said, you need to come back to the team. He was dealing with a torn Achilles at the time. And Hasselbeck said, Trent, you quote, you need to get your ass back here. We need you. This team needs you. We all need you. You need to come back. So Trent and his wife talk about it, and Trent's wife convinces him to go back to camp. And they're in these dorm rooms, and Trent was saying that he would cry himself to sleep at night. And these rooms were such that the walls were so thin that Hasselbeck could hear him. He was crying himself to sleep every single night. So one night, Hasselbeck comes in with a Sega Genesis. He says, come on, man, let's play. And they would play all night long. And Trent said that Hasselbeck would not leave until Trent said, I'm good. And they played all night long, and they bonded, and they connected, and they talked. And he said it was at that time that literally Matt Hasselbeck saved his life. And so Trent is just really real about all these things. It's an amazing podcast. He's a really fascinating guy. So that's what I mean. When Trent says things like, yeah, you know, I could have been much better. I could have done more. This guy had one of the most amazing, fascinating careers I've ever seen in the NFL. Never mind the numbers. I'm talking about the journey and what he was like. And I remember very distinctly what Trent was like when he came out of Fresno State and he first came up and what was said about him and how he was viewed and how he approached it. And to hear him now, and to see what he's developed into, evolved into, is absolutely incredible. It is such good conversation. Like literally, I can't sell this hard enough. I feel this strongly about this conversation. Find episode 77 of the Jim Rohn podcast. If you still can't figure out how a podcast works or how to find that podcast, we'll help you with that. Hit us up. Got caught up in that for a minute. All right, when we come back, Brian Burns joins me. NFL draft prospect. Played his college ball at Florida State. That's next.
You're listening to The Jim Rohn Show.
It's speaking of the NFL draft, it's coming up in a week, and we are trying to get as many prospects as we can. Prior to the draft, I found another one. Former Florida State defensive lineman, first team All-ACC-er, freshman All-American, 24 career sacks. That is fifth all-time in FSU history. 39.5 career tackles for a loss. Eighth all-time in FSU history. The 2019 NFL Draft starts next Thursday in Nashville. We are joined by Brian Burns. Brian, great to have you on. How are you?
What's going on? I'm glad to be here.
Good to have you. All right, so a lot of guys, Brian, view the draft evaluation process like it's something to get through and survive, but it feels like you've kind of attacked it as an opportunity to improve your draft position. Is that how you've done it and approached it, and what's the process been like for you?
Yeah, that's definitely how I approached it. You know, what you put on film is already set in stone. You can't go back and change anything from that. You just have to really just take advantage of the opportunity as far as the combine, your interviews, and pro day, things in that nature, just to boost your draft stock as much as you can. That's the only thing you can do at this point.
Brian Burns, my guest. All right, so you've got about a week to go before the draft, and then your birthday falls in there as well. So how do you approach the next week? For example, do you relax a little bit knowing that everything is done, or do you try and use this time to get back to working out, which is kind of a tough thing to do when you're traveling so much?
Yeah, I'm basically going to use this little time I got off, because now that the visits are done, use this little time I got right now to get some good work in before we go to rookie minicamp and everything. So I'm looking kind of past the draft. I mean, of course, I'm ready for the draft. I'm excited for the draft, but I don't want to go into whatever team picks me out of shape or not ready. You know what I mean? So I'm definitely going to use this time to get some work in, get some workouts.
Brian Burns joining us, All Business. All right, so when you're asked about your game and what you do well, I've heard you talk about being a leader and leading by example. Now, a lot of guys might focus on their pass rushing abilities, their ability to drop into coverage. So why is it important for you to share that, what it takes or what your thoughts are on being a great leader? Why is that a topic of conversation?
Honestly, just because when I was put into this position, like my teammates voted me team captain and everything like that this year, when I was put into that position, I just really took it serious. I took it with a lot of pride, and I really wanted to be the best leader. I didn't want to let nobody down, letting my teammates down. So I really took that with a lot of pride, and that's why I say that that's one of my best attributes besides just the physical ability I have on the field. This is something else that I do, and I take a lot of pride in, is leading my team, doing the right thing, showing the young boys how to do things and always do everything right.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Brian. I was going to say, excuse me. I've always been fascinated by leadership and guys who like to lead from the front, guys who are good at that. Where did you pick up the leadership skills? I mean, is that something you picked up along the way and learned and studied, or is that something you always had?
It kind of came natural to me, but I was never like a rah-rah kind of guy. I didn't make a lot of big kind of speeches in front of it. I just spoke when necessary, but I always did everything right as far as just like doing my work, following the coach and being coachable, things like that. And I'll pull guys, like I'll encourage guys one by one to just follow my lead by doing everything right and being coachable and listening to the coach and everything like that. So I was never a rah-rah kind of guy, but it came natural to just encourage people to follow my lead.
Brian Burns joining us. So you've got these kind of intangible qualities, and then you've got the actual technical things that make you good at what you do. For example, you got that killer spin move, and a lot of that's about footwork. Now, the rumor is you were a pretty good dancer. So how much of that footwork ability comes from playing basketball back in the day, and then how much of that comes from dancing?
it's really funny. On the football field, my favorite pass rush move is a spin move. On the basketball court, my favorite basketball move is a spin move. So, I mean, that's just always been my game ever since I was a kid. So basketball, I mean, footwork, that's all basketball is, really. You got to be able to move your feet to play defense, to drive to the basket, to set up shots, anything you got to do, you got to move your feet on the court. So that helped me out tremendously. And then on the dancing aspect, my whole family we have a dancing family. We make up slide dances and everything like that. We always dance at a party, always been a life of a party. So dancing just also helped with that. So, I mean, you put those two together, that's how you get the spin move.
Dude, I love that because my family can't dance at all. I respect your family as a dance family because my family can't dance. The thing about that is, though, I'm like, in basketball, you're right, it's all about footwork, but in football, it's not. The spin move is not just about footwork. I've heard you talk about this, and your approach to an offensive lineman, you said this quote, once you chop both his arms with your inside hand, you spin around and you use your opposite hand to really clear yourself. You want to hit an area somewhere around the liver, his midsection of his back. That's what you said, quote unquote. I haven't had too many guys come on and talk about hitting guys in the liver. Can you take me through that? What is the most important part of that move, and what's it feel like when you drop in on a lineman and hit him in the liver on the way to the quarterback?
Okay, well, I feel like the most important part of the entire move is the sell, because I feel like without the sell, you will never get to that part of hitting somebody in the liver with the spin. If you don't sell him to make him think that you're going outside, he's going to sit in the inside and catch you once you spin inside. I mean, it's happened before. Like, every spin move isn't going to work. But the biggest part of it is to sell the outside. You really have to sell it. So you're going to stick that outside foot and make him lean. Once he leans, most likely he's going to shoot both of his hands. If he shoots both of his hands with your inside hand, you're going to chop both of them down. And if you can get that his inside hand with your inside hand, you can chop that down. And then ice pick around his midsection, you should be clear completely. There's no way he can really recover because his whole body is turned and you're basically on his shoulder. There's really no way for him to recover. So, and then you also want to aim in that midsection because you don't want your ice pick. That's what it's called. Your ice pick to be too high around his shoulder or his head, and then he can wrap his inside arm back and hold you, anything like that. If you get in that midsection, he won't have any room to really grab you. So that's exactly why you want to put it in that midsection.
Dude, that's beautiful. That is brilliant. And it's all about the sell. It starts with the sell. Now, if it sounds like you're somebody who has studied other guys before you, I know you have. You've studied guys like Von Miller and Dee Ford. But the one guy you really learned from is Jason Taylor. What do you like about his game, and what have you learned from watching him?
I really just like the way he uses his length. He just uses it too. It's phenomenal. I don't know. Everything he does is off the staff. Like I was fortunate enough to talk to him and really to pick his brain a little bit of what he think about pass rush. And he said he does everything off the staff. Everything comes off a long arm. He likes to use his hands. And he really played chess with the offensive lineman as far as, like, he can go power, he can go speed, he can go power, then speed. I just love the way he uses limbs. His stab is unbelievable.
Brian Burns joining us. And Brian, if we go back to the combine, I know you put on some extra weight before you arrived in Indy, and you still ran a 4.53 40. The weight gain, though, was very strategic. How much weight did you gain? And then how much do you think that extra strength is going to help you on the field at the next level?
I gained about 20 pounds. And I think it's really going to help me at the next level because in college I was more of always finesse, always being elusive, always being fast. Next level is going to be guys that have seen that plenty of times, guys that have been in the league 10 plus, whatever, anything like that. So they're going to already see that speed, and they're going to know exactly what to do to stop it. So I need a curve, or I need something else that's going to keep them honest, keep them off balance. And with the weight I gained and the strength I've gained, I feel like that can definitely contribute to my speed, power, my bulls, stutter bulls, and long arms and such techniques as those.
Hey, Brian, how'd you do that? As an example, I think a lot of people listening might think, yeah, weight gain, that's awesome. But the fact of the matter is you worked at that really hard. We're talking about a very strategic, mathematical approach with the folks at Exos. What was a normal day of eating and working out like to gain that weight prior to the combine?
It's not as crazy as people may think. I mean, it wasn't like easy at first, but it's not as crazy as people think. People think I just stuffed my face and I was throwing up and I couldn't take all the food. It wasn't all of that. I was eating regular. It was just the right things I was putting in my body, and I was following the regimen that Exos had planned for me. So basically a normal day, I wake up, I eat breakfast, probably like, I don't know, maybe 4 eggs, a waffle or two, some toast, OJ, something regular. And then after that, I work out. They'll have a 32-ounce shake for me. I'll take that down. And then I'll eat lunch. They have lunch for me. That'll be herb potatoes, organic brown rice, chicken steak, kale, something like that, and a water or whatever. And then after that, I'll work out again. And after the workout, I'll take another shake down, another 32-ounce shake. Those shakes are big. And then I'll eat dinner that they prepare for us, and I'll either get the special or I get the same thing with herb potatoes and chicken and all that. And then after that, once I go home, it'll be around, let me see, it'll probably be around 8 or 9 again. Somewhere around there, I'll eat again. I'll eat something that I made as far as spaghetti or steak and potatoes or something like that. I'll eat something that I cook. And then after that, I say around maybe 11, 12, I'll have about 2 or 3 peanut butter jelly sandwiches. And that was a normal day for me.
Dude, that is incredible. Brian Burns joining us. That's amazing. A steak at 9 and then 2 or 3 peanut butter jelly sandwiches before bed at midnight. And then you're a huge Spider-Man fan. How did you get the nickname, and do you feel like Spider-Man out on the field? Does it play out and translate like that?
It just came. It came about real freaky. Like Spider-Man has always been my favorite. Like just growing up or whatever, I always liked Spider-Man. And like at first, no one never really made that comparison as, "Dang, boy, you play like Spider-Man." Nobody really said that until I started doing the Spider-Man poses and whatnot. Then they was like, okay, well, he actually has the attributes of Spider-Man with the quickness, flexibility, instinct, speed, all kind of stuff. But, so you can basically say I do feel like Spider-Man when I'm out on the field because we have the same attributes.
So, bro, finally, what do you think about Into the Spider-Verse? Is that the best? Is that the best one?
The best what? Marvel movie?
The best Spider-Man movie, Into the Spider-Verse. What do you think? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I seen it. I thought it was tight, but I don't think it's the best. Nah. If they made it a live action kind of movie, then maybe. But I thought it was good, but I didn't think it was the best Spider-Man movie. I'm waiting to see the one that's coming out now. I think this might be the best. This was good. Because I like this new kid that's playing Spider-Man.
I got you. All right. He's a former Florida State defensive lineman. He was a first-team All-ACCer, a freshman All-American. I ran down all the other stats. The NFL draft is coming up next Thursday in Nashville. 39.5 career tackles for loss, 8th all-time in FSU history, and just running a clinic and giving out lessons on pass rushing, dieting, dancing, the movies. My man, you have the complete package. Brian, I appreciate you. Listen, good luck with the draft, and I'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Appreciate you having me on it.
You did a great job, Brian. Really good job. Great to talk to you. Brian Burns. God, that was amazing. I don't know what I was more fascinated by. Him breaking down the spin move and all that's involved in getting to the quarterback. Or him talking. That was a clinic, by the way. Or him talking about a normal day with Exos getting ready for the combine. And how he put on that weight. And what he had to eat to gain 20 pounds. I mean, that sounded like by the time he'd finished lunch, that's more than any of us would eat. And he still had to work out again, still had to have dinner again, still had to have a steak at 9, and then multiple peanut butter and jelly sandwiches before bedtime at 11 or 12. That's hard work. He said, it's not like what people make it out to be. It's not like I'm eating so much and making myself throw up. It's just like this. Just like that. That's a tremendous dude. I would imagine if you sit with a guy like that, never mind what he puts on tape, if you're an NFL team and you sit with a guy like that and he lays all that out, how are you going to come away anything other than extremely impressed? That's why we're trying to get you as many conversations as we can. You may know of him, you may have seen him play, but did you really know all of that about him? Now you know prior to the draft. Somebody else to watch. We will come right back. I still want to talk about the Rockets and how good they look right now. And we're open for the last segment. We've done a lot of things. So if you want to call, now is the time to call. There may not even be a wait. I mean, how long can the wait be? We're down to our last segment. 1-800-636-8686. Here is your bottom of the... Again, my thanks to Brian Burns. Great conversation. This part of the program is sponsored by Grasshopper, the virtual phone system for small business. Separate business from personal and feel more professional in your customer interactions with the Grasshopper business phone solution. Better small business communication starts with Grasshopper. Try it for free at grasshopper.com. What's going on over there? I'm looking through the glass like I hear things, but I don't know what's going on. What are you dopes up to? Dude. Separate Dude, stop it. So let's talk Gronk for a minute. I want to talk about the Rockets, but I do want to talk Rob Gronkowski. Gronk retired from football back on March 24th, but that does not mean that he is retired from being Gronk. And I hope that never happens, because the latest chapter that the big lug and lovable meathead wrote in the big book of bro is one of his best. And that's saying something about this guy. Everybody knows that the Pats won their sixth title earlier this year. And unlike in the NHL, where there's only one Stanley Cup, the NFL will chisel out a new Lombardi every season. So, when the Pats pine-boxed the Rams, Roger Goodell handed over a brand new piece of hardware to the franchise. Fast forward from the trophy presentation on February 3rd to the Red Sox home opener last Tuesday, April 9th. Red Sox went all neighborly with it. They invited the Super Bowl champs to their yard to take a victory lap, to throw out the first pitch, and to show off the six different silver sticks that they have stacked since 2001. You would think that Boston, as a city, would be pretty bored of constantly honoring championship teams every single week, but they're not, because winning never gets old. So the plan for last Tuesday was to have the Pats walk out onto the field at Fenway, hold up the mantelpieces, and watch Julian Edelman throw out the first pitch. And it went off exactly like that. But the real story here happened in the staging tent, out in left field, where the team was waiting to be introduced. Various news outlets report that while waiting undercover in the shadow of the monster, Edelman asked if he could throw a few heaters to warm up the cannon, which he did. And then at some point, he asked somebody to stand in, like a batter, so he could get his accuracy down. And who do you think volunteered for that job? None other than Gronk, of course. And do you think Gronk just stood in the imaginary box with an imaginary bat? Of course not. Hell no. Dude was not about to start waggling around some lumber that wasn't exactly there. He needed a stick. So he did exactly what you think Gronk would do. He grabbed the new Lombardi and he dug in. So I'm going to roll tape on what happened next. The tape comes from the Patriots official Twitter handle. And the three voices that you'll hear documenting what happened are Matthew Slater, Jason McCourty, and Daron Harmon. Check this out.
As he's lined up, Jules is the pitcher, Gronk standing there, and I think we're all under the impression, I mean, no way is he going to swing a Lombardi trophy.
A little strange. We're thinking he's not going to swing the bat. He's not going to do it. And literally at the last second, when 11 throws the ball, we see 87 go from a batting position to a bunt.
Probably not ideal.
Yeah, Gronkowski's parting gift.
Sometimes things happen.
If anybody could do it and get away with it, it'd be Mr. Gronkowski himself. He has now left an everlasting mark so that people will never forget that he was a part of that championship team.
The trophy is special, not damaged. Now it has become vintage, is what I'll say.
This dude, I'm telling you, man, the big fella, and we've always known this about this guy, he is athletic. He is really athletic. You see that videotape? You see the way he squares around and gets that bunt down? That's the epitome of do your job, do your job. I watch a lot of high school baseball, and I watch a lot of travel ball. It's constantly like, do your job, get that bunt down. Gronk did his job. 11 deals, 87 squares perfectly. Freaking Gronk. Textbook. The way he squared up that bunt with the Lombardi. And the textbook left a Rawlings-sized crater on the football. It's now part of the trophy. Literally, Deflategate, part two. The guy celebrated, too, like he just jacked one over the monster into somebody's windshield to win game seven. Because Gronk. Because Gronk doesn't give a damn. That is such an awesome piece of video. Such an awesome chapter. Scotty Smalls grabbing his a-hole stepdad's Babe Ruth signed baseball in the sandlot. Thinks that's messed up. The only thing missing from that entire sequence was Gronk breaking the Lombardi over his knee a la Bo Jackson and spiking the broken pieces, which I'm sure he would have done if he was not so pleased with the way he got down that suicide squeeze perfectly in textbook. I mean, take the most valuable thing you own and then imagine yourself using it as sports equipment, because that's exactly what Gronk just did. The most valuable thing that anybody's ever had. And squared it up. Well, put it down. Squared around and put it down. And he loved it. And afterwards, according to reports, he yelled, quote, "Take it out of my paycheck. Take it out of my paycheck." Most Gronk line ever, if it's true. You know how utterly bored with winning you have to be to square up, to bunt with the Lombardi? If this were Cleveland, as an example, they'd have that thing behind bulletproof glass, buried 6 feet under, with armed guards around it 24/7. But in New England, the Lombardi is just another Louisville in the bat rack. Remember, the same city that broke the commissioner's trophy when a fan threw an unopened beer at the Red Sox parade. I mean, Boston seriously is at the point where they are winning so much and they're so bored with it, they're destroying their own championship hardware because they've got too much of it and they don't know where to put it all. Now, if I'm the Red Sox, the first thing I would do, having watched Gronk's act, I'd see if I can get this guy to come out of retirement and play baseball. That bunt was that good. That bunt was perfect. And no team needs to start getting guys on base and moved over more than the defending champs. As far as a former Patriot attempting a career in baseball, and why not? I saw more from Gronk in laying down that bunt than I've ever seen from Tim Tebow on a diamond. Make this guy an offer. And do it before he dents up any more of the remaining five trophies. I would tell Gronk to never change, but what a waste of time that'd be, because he's never going to. And he never should. And that was awesome. Baseball bat! Get this guy a Lombardi trophy!
Baseball bat! Get this guy a tennis racket!
Where you at, Bron? You know where I am. Where are you at? You know where I am. I'm waiting. I'm not going to read for that either. Offer only. I'm not reading for it. You don't have time to wax your car? No matters. New 303 touchless sealant will save you hours. It takes just minutes to apply. You simply spray on. You rinse off. It protects up to 2 times longer than traditional waxes. More protection and shine with less effort and time. It is available at O'Reilly Auto Parts. My thanks to Lincoln Riley, Tyler Glasnow, Brian Byrne, and Clones. Bring it. Man, these weeks are going fast. The Friday show is an important show. Step up, get it done. See you tomorrow. We're out.